Okay, we are going to start. The speaker today is Ivan Agulló, and he's going to talk about loop quantum cosmology, non-Gaussianity, and the CMB.
Thank you, Javier, for the introduction. Can you all listen me well? I assume so. So, the goal of my talk is to give you a brief overview of the relation of LQC and cosmological observations. And, you know, normally when I talk about LQC, I spend the first part of the talk discussing the mathematical background, the foundations of the theory, this quantum field theory on quantum space-time, etc. And always happens to me that I don't have enough time to describe the phenomenology, so the relation with observations. So in this talk, I want to do it differently. So I will take advantage of the fact that most of you have heard many talks about LQC. So I will skip that mathematical foundations, and I will go directly to the relation with the CMB. So let's go to the next slide. The slide number 2, please. And, you know, part of my motivation came out when I got here to LSU, and, you know, I went to Jorge Paulin's office and I asked him, Jorge, what do you think that a young person like me should focus on? What kind of problems young people should address? And he told me, you know, first, you should work in something that you yourself care about. Second, you should work in something that other people inside your community care about, but also people even outside your community care about. So I thought that was a good advice, and I will try to follow it in this talk. So let's go to slide number 3. So in this slide, you can see a picture summarizing the standard model of cosmology. So starting from the bottom, we have the dark energy domination era, the current era, then matter domination and radiation domination. That part is well understood. And we know that if we start radiation domination with tiny density perturbations, then time evolution will make them to grow because of gravitational instability, and they eventually will form galaxies, galaxy clusters, and the large scale structure. However, the bottom part of the talk, the very early universe, is less established. So we believe that these tiny density perturbations were created in that region from some sort of quantum effects. And the key idea is that, you know, that the rapid expansion of the universe is able to amplify vacuum fluctuations in a similar way that happens in black holes with Hawking radiation. And these quantum perturbations then will induce the primordial density perturbations that will give rise to the galaxy distribution, etc. And I always say that for me, this idea that, you know, all cosmic structures are originated from vacuum fluctuations is one of the most nice ideas that we have in physics. However, there are many proposals for the concrete mechanism producing those quantum fluctuations. We have inflation, we have matter bounds, we have ekpyrotic cosmology, etc. And you know, when I started working on inflation, and I think as it also happened to many other people coming from gravity, inflation looked like kind of artificial. But you know, after working on that for a while, I understood why inflation is by far the most popular model among cosmologists. And you know, I now really believe that something very similar to inflation may happen in the early universe. And you know, and because of that, my goal is to use loop quantum gravity not to replace inflation, but to complement it. So that will be the goal of my talk. But you know, in physics, my opinion is not really very relevant. What is more important is what nature tells us. So let's start talking about observations in slide number 4. So, you know, the way that we test our theories in the early universe is by observing the statistics of the CMB. So the statistical distribution of temperature and isotropies in the CMB. And we know that at leading order, that distribution is dominated by the two-point function of temperature and isotropies. And you have that in the first equation, where the brackets make reference to a statistical average, and the C emphasizes that this is a classical statistical average. And then you know that in a isotropic distribution, this two-point function is fully characterized by what we call the angular power spectrum, this CL in blue, and this is the quantity that cosmologists pay attention to. And in the last equation, we can see, you can see the same, a similar or equivalent definition of the power spectrum using the coefficients of the angular Fourier decomposition of temperature distributions. So slide number five, please. Now we can see, we can talk about what the theory tells us. And we have inflation, and in inflation, you know, what one discusses is about quantum fields propagating in a rapidly expanding geometry. So in inflation, given an inflaton field and a potential, you can compute this power spectrum, but this power spectrum arises now in a different way. It is a quantum expectation value. This is why I emphasize the Q in blue. This is because it's a quantum expectation value. And now what we do is to equate this, we compare these two quantities, the theory and observations, and this is what appears in the plot. And as you know, and you have seen before, the agreement with observations is really spectacular. And in my opinion, this nice agreement, together with the economy of assumptions in inflation, are the main support for this model. So this is quite nice, but you know, there are also some deviations from the theoretical predictions. They appear for very low multiples, for L smaller than 30, and this is what people call large-scale anomalies. And they are called large-scale anomalies because small L's correspond to two points in the sky which are separated by large angles. And you know, because these anomalies at large scales will be an important part of my talk, I want to tell you what the Planck team has to say about these anomalies. So let's go to slide number six, please. So, but rather than putting words on their mouth, what I want is to tell you explicitly what they say. So this is one of the papers that they published recently, Isotropy and Statistics of the CMB, and what they say is the following. So in the abstract, they say that we test the statistical isotropy and Gaussianity of the CMB, and they find consistency with Gaussianity while a power deficit at large angular scales is manifest in several ways. So they see this anomaly, which is a lack of power compared to the theoretical predictions. Then they keep going and they say, we strongly prove that large-scale dipolar power asymmetry, the large-scale dipolar power asymmetry, detecting it with several independent tests. So the second anomaly they observe is that, you know, at large scales, the CMB is anisotropic, and this anisotropy appears on the form of a dipole, so more power in one half in the sky than in the other. And they emphasize that when they overlap, these results are consistent with the Planck 2013 analysis. And in the introduction, they also emphasize something that I find interesting. They say that, you know, the case for anomalous features in the CMB had been strengthened. Hence, such anomalies have attracted considerable attention in the community, since they could be the visible traces of fundamental processes occurring in the early universe. So they say that, you know, that these anomalies may indicate that we need physics beyond the standard inflationary paradigm, and I will share that point of view in this talk. But, you know, they also emphasize that one has to be careful because the statistical significance of those anomalies is not huge. It's just around 3 sigmas. So the literature also supports an ongoing debate about the significance of these anomalies. But it is worth to mention that these anomalies were also detected by the WMAP satellite. So one can rule out that, you know, that these effects are coming from instrumental noise or some other kind of systematics. So let's go to slide number seven. So to summarize, my point in this motivation is that, you know, that inflation is a very compelling framework. However, it has several open issues of mainly two kinds. At the theoretical level, you know, we have the Big Bang singularity in inflationary models. Some models involve transplanckian wavelengths. We don't know how inflation begins, how long it is, and what happened before inflation. Therefore, we don't know what are the initial conditions for inflation, and we have to assume there. What is the potential, the scalar field, sorry, and the potential coming from? What happens in reheating? And we also have issues related to observations, which is the CMB anomalies, the dipole modulation, and the power suppression at large scales. And the goal of the program of LQC is to use loop quantum cosmology to answer some of these questions, in particular the questions which are related to quantum gravity, which are in blue in this slide. So to finish the motivation, let's go to slide number 8. And as I said at the beginning, you know, you have heard many talks by myself and other people about the theoretical background. So we know that there is now a precise answer to the theory question. For instance, we know that LQC predicts a Big Bang, a bounce that replaces the classical Big Bang singularity. We know that if we include in the model a scalar field with a potential, that inflation arises naturally, almost unavoidably. And we have worked out in detail a rigorous quantum field theory in quantum spacetimes to describe cosmic curvature perturbations in the inflationary regime, so in the Planck scale. And you know, this, together with the contribution of many more people, provides the mathematical framework that I want to use in this talk. So in this talk, I will start working on this mathematical framework, and I will argue two things. One is that LQC really, produces a power spectrum which is in agreement with observational constraints. And second, that LQC also provides a mechanism, which is a full quantum gravity mechanism, the bounds, which is able to A, generate a dipole modulation in the CMB only for large scales, quite naturally. And second, the same mechanism and using the same values of the parameter is able to account for the power suppression of the power spectrum at large scales. And so there is a single mechanism relating to a priori unrelated anomalies in the CMB. And third, the same mechanism will be able to predict similar anomalies with CMB polarization, so for perturbation, and which will be correlated with anomalies in the temperature distribution. And just to say that this mechanism will be based on non-Gaussianity, which correlates modes that we see in the CMB with super Hubble modes.
Interruption.
So I don't know what was the last part that you were able to listen. Maybe Brajesh, can you tell me?
Last part, we were on slide 8.
Did I finish it?
Yeah, you were almost one. You didn't exit. You were at third point.
The third point. Okay, so you can read what is written there, and we can go directly to slide number 9.
Okay, good. That sounds good.
So I want to discuss about LQC and the power spectrum at leading order. So let me first summarize what is going to be our strategy. So, you know, because LQC encompasses the Planck scale, we can include the Planck curve of the universe in our description of the universe. So we are in slide number 10, sorry, now. So we have a quantum bounce produced by quantum gravitational effects. Then we have a pre-inflationary phase, and then inflation will start sometime in the future. And we have control, mathematical control of all those phases. Then what I want to do now is to discuss perturbations living on that space-time. So in our framework, perturbations will start in the vacuum state at early time. That early times may be the bounds, or maybe sometime even before the bounds. That difference doesn't really matter much, because all the action will happen in the contracting phase, in the expanding phase, sorry. And then we will use our mathematical framework of quantum field theory on quantum spacetimes to evolve perturbations across the bounds. And we will find that this evolution amplifies, excites curvature perturbations, particularly for long wavelength modes. And then after some time, perturbations will reach the onset of inflation, but perturbations will be in an excited state at that time, rather than in the usual Banks-Davis vacuum assumed by cosmologists. So, And, you know, and those perturbations will keep memory of the bounce because they were generated at the bounce. And then they will produce some observational effects in the CMB, which are therefore observational window to the pre-inflationary phase. So just let me to remark that I have to choose a potential to do the computations, and for simplicity, I use the quadratic potential. But of course, other choices are possible, and results have been recently shown to be robust against the choice of a different potential by Brajesh Gupta and Beatrice Bonga. And the reason is that, you know, these effects are born in quantum gravity, and the potential is not the primary source. So let's go to slide number 11. You know, here, before showing you the exact computations, I want to make a kind of long parenthesis to give you some intuition about why perturbations are affected by the bounce. And I want to mention some piece of history. So the first intuition about why perturbations are affected by a bounce or something like an expanding universe came from Schrödinger in 1939. So Schrödinger considered a quantum particle satisfying a relativistic wave equation, equation one, like the Klein-Gordon equation. And you know that a complete set of solutions of that equation is made of positive and negative frequency modes. And what Schrödinger did then was to write the same equation, but now in an expanding background. So then some time-dependent coefficients, the blue coefficients, appear. And of course, because of these time-dependent coefficients, positive and negative plane waves are no longer solutions to that equation. That means, as you know, that if you start an evolution giving some initial data of some positive frequency mode, after some time, the solution will not be a positive frequency mode anymore, but a combination of positive and negative frequency modes.
Self, or there is more people listening?
I mean, there are people at Penn State. I don't know.
Okay, so let me wait.
I think we can go ahead.
Okay.
I'm okay there as well.
Okay, thank you. So let's try again. Sorry for this interruption. Sometimes technical problems are unexpected. And I will keep going in case we have the same problems again. We will have to just cancel the talk. So I was in slide number 12, and I was, you know, just summarizing some nice ideas by Schrödinger already in 1939 about, you know, the fact that when you have quantum particles propagating in a space-time which is dynamical, so it is changing with time, there is an avoidable mixing of positive and negative frequency modes, and Schrödinger had already the intuition to realize that that will mean creation of particles. So let me just read the last paragraph. He said that, for all I have found, I could conclude that the alarming phenomena, this particle production, may play an important part in the critical periods of cosmology. For instance, when the expansion changes to contraction, or vice versa, like happened in a bounce. So of course, this was in 1939, and in the context of quantum mechanics. And I think the result was almost forgotten for a long time, and it was kind of rediscovered in the 60s. Let's go to slide number 13. In the PhD thesis of Leonard Parker in Harvard, and the thesis has the title "The Creation of Particles in an Expanding Universe." And what Parker did was, you know, to reproduce the same idea, but now in the modern language of quantum field theory on curved spacetime. So let's go to start number 14. So in this context, it is quite easy to see what is going on. So I write in slide number 14, the first equation is the equation of motion for tensor perturbations in Fourier space. Or I write tensor perturbations because the equation is a bit simpler, but the same conclusions also apply for scale. The prime is conformal time in that equation. And you know, one can display better the physical content of that equation if we factorize 1 over A factor, where A is the scale factor of the universe. So we define this chi variable, and the same equation for the chi variable looks like that equation in the center of the slide, where we see in blue what is the key of the equation. So the key ingredients is that, you know, all the action is going to happen by comparing two quantities, the physical momentum of the mode, which is k over a squared, so the physical momentum compared to the Ricci scalar. So that comparison is going to give us the physics of the propagation of perturbations. In such a way that, you know, if we have modes which are with physical momentum much larger than the Ricci scalar, so they are too energetic to feel the curvature, so the curvature is unimportant, and they propagate as in Minkowski spacetime, so no amplification, no effects from the curvature. But if the physical momentum of the modes is of the same order as the curvature, then the curvature is important, and we'll have this amplification, or in the language of Schrödinger and Parker, this particle creation. So in order to see what happens at the bounds, what we have to do is to pay attention to the time evolution of the curvature scale close to the bound, and that is in slide number 15. So in here I have a plot with time vertically, and the thick orange line is the radius of curvature in LQC. So the radius of curvature is minimum at the bounds, therefore the curvature is maximum. And in black, I point out here two scales which are important for the problem. One is the scale defined by the curvature at the bounds, this lambda LQC, and the other is the scale defined by the curvature at the onset of inflation, which is lambda I. And I write here three wavelengths of Fourier modes, lambda 1, lambda 2, and lambda 3. So lambda 1 in blue, we can see that, you know, that this mode has a wavelength which is much smaller than the curvature radius during all the pre-inflationary evolution, so from the bounds to the onset of inflation. So these modes do not feel the curvature before inflation, they only feel the curvature, you know, later on in inflation. So if they are born in the vacuum at the bounds, they will remain in the vacuum at the onset of inflation. So they don't feel the bounds. However, modes lambda 2, they will cross the curvature radius soon after the bounds, so even though they are in the vacuum at every time, they will reach inflation in an excited state. And then we have the mode lambda 2, which is too long to cross the Hubble radius, the curvature radius, so it never crosses the curvature radius, and we shouldn't expect amplification for that mode. So therefore, this qualitative discussion tells us that we should expect the LQC pre-inflationary evolution to affect modes in that range, wavelengths between lambda LQC and lambda I. And the same can be translated into wave numbers or momenta. So Fourier modes in that range will reach the onset of inflation in an excited state, which we can compute and study its observational consequences. So let's go to next slide, slide number 16. In this slide, I show you the exact numerical evolution of perturbations from every time to the end of inflation, and I plot the scalar and tensor power spectra. So because both spectra are very similar, let me just describe one of them, the scalar, for instance. So in that plot, the gray dots are the numerical evolution of individual Fourier modes k, and the black line is the average of the gray dots. So in that plot, we see the three regions I was mentioning before. So starting from the right, we see that modes with very large k, so k larger than KLQC, they have very short wavelength, and therefore they don't feel the pre-inflationary phase, so they reach inflation in the vacuum, and the predictions of the power spectrum agree with the standard inflationary prediction, almost a scale invariant spectrum. Second, modes between KI and KLQC, they are amplified by the pre-inflationary evolution, and we have this if you want, quanta, creation of quanta, and we have this enhancement of the power spectrum due to the bound. And finally, modes with very small k, very large wavelength, they don't cross the curvature radius, so they are not amplified. And also it's important to pay attention where the window in k-space of observable modes, so modes that we can actually see in the CMB, is located in the right-hand side of the plot. So in our sky, we can see, you know, the modes that were not amplified by the bounds, and a little bit in the low K regime of the modes that were amplified. So in summary, as expected, the pre-inflationary evolution modifies the power spectrum for the lowest K values, so longest wavelengths that we can see, and it amplifies them a lot for even longer wavelengths, wavelengths that are even outside our Hubble radius today. So what we call super Hubble modes. So let's go to slide number 17. So if we translate those results to angular space, we see that, you know, we find agreement with inflation for large L's, L larger than 30 in the angular decomposition. Therefore, we find agreement with observations in that regime. And LQC effects appear for small L. And let me very quickly summarize the more important ones, which is we find some kind of reduction of the tensor to scalar ratio, which helps to alleviate the constraints on the quadratic potential, although only mildly. We find a modification of the consistency relation, which is this relation that I write there and is quite important for cosmology. And we also find some effects on the spectral indices and running. But you know, this is very nice and we have studied this in full detail. I am just here summarizing a lot. But you know, after a while, I was a bit, if you want, disappointed because, you know, all the features of LQC, the leading features of LQC, are swept away to super Hubble scale. So the main effects of LQC are in wavelengths which are too long to be observable today. And that is kind of annoying. And also, as I show you, I am finding enhancement of power at large angles when Planck is observing suppression. So let's go to the next slide. Slide number 18. So to finish this section, I just want to repeat, to emphasize the fact that, you know, we have been working on this power spectrum for 3 or 4 years, and we have analyzed it in great detail. So I am here just summarizing. So there are many robustness tests. So we find the conclusions are robust against many things, you know, change of initial conditions inside an appropriate family, change of the potential, quantum fluctuations on the geometry. You know, there are also some agreement between different approaches. And, you know, many interesting results have been obtained on the way. But, you know, I really feel that we need to be more ambitious than that. That we, you know, we are just producing some small effects at a small case or large angles in the sky. And all the action of LQC is in super Hubble mode. So we need to be more ambitious and go beyond what we have right now. And this is what I want to discuss in the next section. So let's go to slide 20, so non-Gaussianity and the power spectrum. Slide number 20. So the question I want to ask is there any way that super Hubble modes can affect observable ones? So if we have some very long wavelengths in the universe that, you know, is much larger than our Hubble patch, is there any way that wavelength can affect the modes that we see inside our observable universe? And it turns out that cosmologists have paid attention to this question recently, and they found a remarkable answer, which, however, it is not really surprising if you think a little bit about it. The answer is yes, but if super Hubble modes and observable modes are correlated, that is, if there are non-Gaussianity that relates both set of modes. So slide number 21, please. So the statement here is the following. If we only see a small patch within a larger universe, then correlations with super Hubble modes will generically modify the observed power spectrum. And the modifications may be of different kind, can be a change in power, they can introduce anisotropies, etc. Another way of saying the same thing is the following. Imagine that we have, you know, a large three-point function involving two modes that we see in our CMB and one super Hubble mode. And now we have to trace over the super Hubble mode because we cannot see it directly in our CMB. So we trace over that mode, you know, the correlation will translate in a correlation between the two modes that we can actually see, which will translate in non-diagonal terms in the two-point function, because we now have correlations between different cases. And it is simple to show that, you know, if we have non-diagonal terms in the two-point function in momentum space, if you compute the two-point function in position space, it will depend both on x, so on the position, and also on the direction of the vector joining the two points. And that means that the two-point function is inhomogeneous and anisotropic in our observable patch of the universe. So the message here is that if we have large non-Gaussianity involved in super-Hubble modes, our two-point function will be modulated, will be modified. So let's go to slide number 22. So let's come back now to LQC and ask the question. Okay, does LQC have a mechanism to produce those correlations, to correlate observable and super-Hubble modes? And I have to recall that in standard inflation, the modes are not correlated. So do we have such a mechanism in LQC? And to answer that question, I have to come back to a paper that they wrote with Parker some years ago. And the statement there was that if perturbations are in an excited state at the beginning of inflation, so if the state is not the vacuum for perturbations, but we have some quanta present, then inflation is able to produce the non-Gaussianities that we need. So this non-Gaussianity involving super-Hubble and observable scale, which cosmologists call squeeze configuration. So inflation by itself is not able to produce this non-Gaussianity, but if there are perturbations at the onset of inflation, then inflation can do it. But recall that the evolution across the bounds in LQC precisely excites perturbation. And this is what we saw in the power spectrum, that we have, you know, that we have this enhancement because particles have been created, if you want. So therefore, the message here is that LQC is able to create excitations and inflation is able to correlate them. So let's go to slide number 23. So I have computed the three-point function that arises from inflation and the LQC pre-inflationary evolution. And you know, the three-point function in momentum space is characterized by what people call the bi-spectrum, this B. This B depends on three momenta, K1, K2, and K3. But there is a delta function, so the three momenta are not independent. There is only two independent momenta. This is why we call the function the bi-spectrum, even though we are talking about the three-point function. I plot here the bi-spectrum arising in LQC as compared to the bi-spectrum in standard inflation. as a function, sorry, of K2 and K3, fixing the third momenta, K1, and K1 is an observable mode. And I have highlighted in this plot the region in which the three momenta, this triangle, in which the three momenta are in the observable range. So this is the region that we can actually see in the CMB, the three momenta. And the rest of the plot involves at least one of the momenta involved is super-Hubble mode. So what the plot is telling us is two things. First, that if we focus on observable modes, then they are not correlated. So therefore, there are vanishing or negligible non-Gaussianities in our CMB. And that is good because this is precisely what Planck is observing, absence of non-Gaussianity when the three modes are in our sky. However, if we involve super-Hubble modes, we see in the plot this peak. And this peak tells us that the longest wavelengths we can see in the sky are strongly correlated with super-Hubble mode, as we already expect looking at the power spectrum. And the statement is that those correlations will be able to modulate or to modify our observable power spectrum. So let's go to the next section, slide number 4, modulated power spectrum in LQC. So what I'm going to do in this section, slide number 25, is to compute that modulation to see what it looks like at the quantitative level. So the first equation in this slide is how the two-point function in our sky is modified by the presence of non-Gaussianity of correlations with super-Hubble mode. So we have two terms. The first term is the standard Gaussian and diagonal piece that I was describing at the beginning of my talk. And the second piece is the Gaussian, the non-Gaussian modulation, where this G is proportional to the bi-spectrum. And this piece is non-diagonal because, you know, the three momenta involved have to form a triangle. We can translate this equation to angular space, and this is the equation in the box, where we have, again, the diagonal and Gaussian part plus the non-Gaussian modulation, where I have expanded the non-Gaussian modulation in multiples, capital L and capital N. And now this amplitude, ALM, contains the information about the non-Gaussianity, and we can compute that amplitude given the bias spectrum that I showed in the previous slide. And therefore, you know, we can compute what kind of dipole modulation this non-Gaussian contribution is going to produce for L equal 1. For L equal 2, we will have a quadrupole, L equal 3 an octuple, etc. We can compute them one by one. To show you what the results I have obtained, let me show them just answering to four questions. So the questions are the following. The first one is, are there values of our free parameter? So in LQC, I forgot to mention it in the first part. In LQC, our free parameters are given by, you know, by the value of the inflaton field at the bounds, phi bounds, and also the parameters of the potential, which in my case is just the mass of the inflaton field. So the question is, are there values of these parameters for which the dipole modulation, this dipole asymmetry that non-Gaussianities are producing, is in quantitative agreement with the anomalies that Planck is observing? And the answer is yes. I can find values for which the dipole, the expectation value of the dipole looks like, as you can see in the figure. The dipole is scale dependent. It depends on which angles we pay attention in the sky. So it's only significant for L smaller than 30, so large angles in the sky, and has that amplitude. And, you know, changing the parameters of the model, the dipole can be larger or smaller. But with that value, one finds agreement with observations. And observations are measuring this dipole of 0.07 when average over multiples is smaller than 64. So the statement here is that, you know, the evolution across the bounds can produce a scale-dependent dipole modulation only on large scales quite naturally. So slide number 27, please. So now the question is, but you know, what about higher multiples? Are they also in agreement with observations? And the answer is, you know, you can compute them. And what I find is that the quadrupole is much smaller than the dipole, so too small to be observable. And the octuple is even smaller. And this hierarchy keeps going for higher multiples. And this agrees with observations, which doesn't find observations do not find any modulation for multiples larger than one. Now, you know, the person asking the questions is quite pessimist, and he says, okay, this is nice, but, you know, this is not really a prediction. This is more like a post-diction, because you are fixing the parameters to reproduce the dipole. So the important question now appears in the next slide, slide 28, and is, can you explain something else with the same values of the parameters? For example, can you account for the power suppression using the same values of the parameters that you fix to reproduce the dipole? And the answer is in the affirmative, and this can be seen by paying attention to the monopole, L equals 0. So for the same values of the parameters, the monopole looks like what you see in the picture, which is also scale dependent, only significant for multiples smaller than 30, and has that value. And the statement here is that this modulation, the monopole modulation, can both increase or decrease the leading order power spectrum at low L that I was showing you at the beginning of the talk. So now the question is, you know, to answer more precisely the question, I have to do the same thing that you know, that people in cosmology do. To answer, how likely is for our model to reproduce the power suppression? So what people do is to do simulations and, you know, and evaluate how many of your simulations show a power suppression in agreement with observation. And I recall that, you know, as you can see below the box, that in a standard inflation, you know, a standard inflationary paradigm, if you do simulations, only a few per mil reproduce the power suppression that we see. And of course, this is the reason why people call the anomalies an anomaly, because they are very unlikely in the standard inflation. So the statement here is that in LQC with this monopole modulation, one-third of the simulations show a suppression of at least 10% for low multiple. So in other words, this modulation is able to compensate for the enhancement that I was showing at the beginning, and is able to produce a suppression for at least one third of the simulations that I have produced. And I think this is interesting because, you know, the statement here is that there is a single mechanism, which is the bounce, fully quantum gravity mechanism, which is able to account for two a priori disconnected anomalies. And just let me remark that you know, Abai and Brajesh group have also another different argument to account for the power suppression. It has nothing to do with non-Gaussianity. It's just, you know, a Gaussian mechanism. It has to do with initial conditions. But you know, just to tell you that there is other ideas, interesting ideas in the literature in LQC. So let's go to slide number 29. So indeed, in that slide, I am plotting the shape of the modulation. So we have three curves. The green curve is the standard inflationary result. The red curve is inflation plus LQC at the leading order, so without non-Gaussianity. This is what I was discussing at the beginning of the talk, and you can see the agreement for large L's, but the power enhancement for small L's. And the blue dot is inflation with LQC and this non-Gaussian modulation. And you can see how the non-Gaussian modulation is able to you know, compensate for the enhancement and produce suppression for low multiple. So the last question I want to ask is, you know, again, in the this pessimist guy, ask me, okay, this is nice, you can predict stuff that we are observing, or you can account for some of the observable anomalies, but you know, maybe it's because you know, you knew a priori what the result was. So can you predict something that we haven't seen yet? So can you make some predictions for the future? And the answer is yes. And the argument is the following. So recall that for this modulation, the argument was that if you have large three-point function involving a super Hubble mode, that will translate in a modulation of the two-point function. But for the same reason, if there are large correlations between tensor modes that we can see in the sky and super Hubble scalar modes, if that is true, then we, for the same reason, we will have a modulation of the two-point function for tensor modes. And even more, since both correlations, both three-point functions, are generated by the same scalar super Hubble mode, these modulations in the scalar and tensor power spectrum will be correlated. So what I have done is to compute the three-point function tensor scalar, and I have found that the result is quite similar to the scalar three-point function. I have computed again these multiples, and they are almost identical for the scalar multiples. So the prediction here is that if the low features that we see in the CMB are really originated from a bound, then tensor perturbations must also show the anomalies. So they must show a similar power suppression at the small angles, at large angles, and a similar dipole modulation, dipole anisotropy. So let me just go to the conclusions, so I still finish on time. So, slide number 32. So the statement here is, what I want to emphasize here is that, you know, LQC has matured significantly in the last 4 years regarding connection with observations, and in the previous years also regarding, you know, the background, the quantization. So we have what I consider a solid mathematical framework. We have, you know, we can produce power spectra which agree with observations at the small angles in the sky, and we find a new mechanism which is purely based on quantum gravity, which is able to account for the features that people is observing in the CMB. And one is also able to produce new predictions involving tensor modes, so polarization of the CMB that will be observed in the near future. And you know, cosmologists normally emphasize that, you know, that the significance of these anomalies depends also on the theory, because, you know, if you have compelling theoretical models, producing them and relating them, the significance will increase. And I think here we have one of those situations. But of course, this is not the end of the story. You know that much more work is needed in many points. So we have to clarify the connections with the full theory. We discussed that in the last Loop conference, and we already saw very interesting and nice ideas on that respect. So we also have to keep working on the convergence of different approaches for perturbation, and I think that will strengthen our field as a whole. And we also would be nice to find new ideas to have an inflaton field and a potential arising from LQC. That would be wonderful. And more work on non-Gaussianity as needed, etc., etc. But, you know, the point I want to make is that I believe that LQC is one of the best chances we have to make solid contact with observations, and I think we all, as a community, are working in the right direction. And this is all what I wanted to say, so thank you.
Okay, questions?
Can you hear us, Simon?
Yes, I can.
Okay. So if you go to slide number 26, you have these plots where the expectation value of capital A and capital L equal to 1. And this shows enhancement as you go to smaller values of L.
Right.
Right? Is there intuitive way to see how this enhancement can lead to a suppression in the power?
Or yes, so you mean slide number 26 or 26, but that is the dipole. So that is the amplitude of the dipole modulation. And the amplitude can be positive, you know, it's a dipole. So this has, I mean, this is not the enhancement of the power itself. So this is the amplitude of a dipole modulation on the top of the power spectrum. And there is no problem in the fact that is positive. So your question is maybe better addressed in slide number 28, where that is the expectation value of the monopole modulation. And I show here a monopole modulation which is positive. But you know, this monopole modulation is really the square root of the average amplitude of the modulation, which is always positive by definition. But you know, but a given realization will give you an amplitude of the monopolar modulation which can be positive or negative, both. So with both signs. This, if you want, is the expectation value, the absolute value of that. So so when I do simulations, some of them have even larger enhancement, but some of them have suppression. And I was saying that, you know, that at least one third of the simulations show suppression in agreement with observation.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for the question.
Hey, Ivan, I also had a question. Why was there in your power spectrum, I think on 29, why is there a kink near L is 3?
That is a good question. I think it's just because that point shouldn't be there. So probably I just forget about that point. That point shouldn't be there probably.
Okay.
So could it be just because of one of the realizations or?
No. I think this point. I think this point is just because I was doing something else with the plot, and this point got in without me realizing. So.
Okay.
More questions?
Yes, I have a question. So, hi, Ivan Zandrea. I understand that it's quite important in your results to set among initial conditions that the perturbations are in some vacuum at the bound. Is that correct?
more or less. So they are in some vacuum, and it can be at the bounds or before the bounds. I have tried both possibilities.
Oh, I see. And then the results don't change much.
the results change a little bit, but not much. So I have that in the last paper I posted on the archive with one of the students here. We analyzed that in full detail, and you know, and the amplitude of this modulation changes a little bit if I choose different times to fix initial conditions, but not that much.
Okay, interesting, thank you.
So thank you for the question, I didn't emphasize that enough in the talk.
More questions? Okay, there are no more questions, let's thank Ivan again.